This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's going on, everybody, and good morning. Today is Friday, March 14th. Happy payday, potentially, for you guys out there. And this is your daily Go Birds morning update, giving you all the Eagles news you need to know, as well as what to keep an eye out for today. And, well, we got a lot to get into today. The Eagles signed a free agent on Thursday, but you already know we did an emergency pod about that one. Josh Uche, the edge rusher who has played for the Patriots, he's played for the Chiefs. Sadly, not Azeez Ojulari, someone I really thought that they were going to be able to land, but we did an emergency pod on it. So that is in your feed. Be a longer explanation there of who he is as a player, what type of player he could be for the Eagles, what his role could be, his strengths, his weaknesses, and what it means for potentially Brandon Graham and Bryce Huff and their chances of staying with the team. So make sure you check that out in the feed. But today, I want to get into a few moves the Eagles made, or I should say one coaching move the Eagles made. We heard from Kenyon Green and Dorian Thompson-Robinson, two of the new Eagles from this offseason so far. And then Joe Banner was on the 94WIP morning show, and I thought he gave a really interesting interview about a bunch of different things. So I'm actually going to play a large majority, actually probably all of it, for you guys. He got into a lot of cool things, but then also I have some thoughts on what he had to say about the Eagles cap space. So let's get right into it. So I recorded the daily pod, and then of course, almost like I made it happen, the Eagles went and they signed a tight end. So I'm jumping in here, going to put it at the top. I'll tell you a little bit how I feel about the signing of Harrison Bryant. So Harrison Bryant, you guys should be familiar with him because he was on the list of tight ends I thought they could target in free agency. And why was he on that list? Well, a couple reasons. One, he's only 26 and he just turned 26. He's 6'5", 230 pounds, and he has shown an ability to be a good pass-catching tight end. So Harrison Bryant to the Eagles on a one-year deal, another one-year deal, really, really handing out these one-year flyers. But what else do you guys need to know about Harrison Bryant? So I think it's a good signing in one way, a questionable signing in another. A good signing in the way that I do think he has real potential to be a good receiving tight end. He's had the unfortunate reality of playing with bad quarterbacks his whole career. And then last year, when he goes to the Raiders, they draft Brock Bowers. Obviously, not a good place to be a tight end if Brock Bowers is ahead of you. So, like I was saying, let's talk about him as a receiver. So, 6'5", 230 pounds. You can just see when you watch film of him. Like, he is just a good receiving body. He's good in the open field, long arms, tall frame. So, has a wide catch radius. So, I do like him as a receiver. The numbers are not outstanding. In the 5 years he's been in the NFL, 140 targets, 98 catches, 10 touchdowns. 10 touchdowns is kind of noteworthy. For a guy that's been a backup his whole career, it's a decent amount. I mean, think about it. Calcaterra's been here 3 years, I think, and he has one He has one touchdown. So he has gotten, you know, a decent amount of red zone targets and 11 drops. So his drop percentage is right around 7%. Not great, but 11 drops, you know, and 140 targets, a little noteworthy as well. So I do think he has good potential as a receiving tight end. Where this doesn't make as much sense to me is how he fits in with the current roster. So Grant Calcaterra is going to be the top receiving tight end. I mean, Harrison Bryant might end up being better, so maybe it's a little up in the air, but we do know Calcaterra is not a good blocking tight end. That's why last year when Goddard was out, they were not as good running the ball because Goddard's a good blocker. Calcaterra is not a good blocker. So I thought when if they were to target a tight end, that they would go after someone that can block. Well, Harrison Bryant's blocking numbers are not great. He's had good years, but so last year in pass blocking, he was 103rd overall. Not great. In run blocking, he was 108th. So there were over 100 tight ends in the NFL that were better at both pass blocking and run blocking. So last year, not good. 2023, he was better. Like, he has shown more potential as a pass blocker, and these are all according to Pro Football Focus. 2023, he was fifth. 2022, he was 15th. So two good years in a row there of being a pass blocker. And then in 2021, he was 79th. So some real bad years, some real good years. As a run blocker, which is where I think they would need them more, because Calcaterra will be on the field, I think, in more of the pass block and more of the run. Calcaterra will be on the field more in passing situations, I would think, at least initially. As a run blocker, the last 4 years, 108th, 103rd, 33rd in 22, and then 115th. So he's been outside the top 100 three of 4 years as a run blocker. So Pro Football Focus is just one source. It's just their opinion. I'm sure the Eagles likely project him as being able to at least be coached into being a better blocker. Again, long frame, big body. But that would be my concern with Harrison Bryant is the blocking. I think he will be able to contribute as a receiving tight end. But if Goddard's gone, and I don't think they would frankly sign Harrison Bryant if he wasn't. I also don't know why Harrison Bryant would sign here if Goddard was going to be back. I mean, I'm sure Harrison Bryant didn't have like a million offers, but you would think he would have a better offer than second or third string tight end, or at least not third if you consider Calcaterra the second with Goddard the first. So not a great blocker. I think this is more of a pass-catching tight end, but I like the move overall just because I don't really care about blocking personally. So I, you know, especially from a tight end. So if he's a good receiving tight end, I'm going to be more in on it, but how he'll get on the field will be interesting to see. So had to jump in and talk to you guys about Harrison Bryant. Now back to your regularly scheduled Daily Go Birds. The Georgia to Eagles to Philadelphia Eagles pipeline is alive and real as the Eagles have hired a coach from the Georgia Bulldogs, bringing in Coach Montgomery Van Gorder from the Georgia Bulldogs, and he is expected to be an offensive assistant for the Eagles. So, who is the new coach, Montgomery Van Gorder? Well, this is according to SI.com. Quote, Van Gorder has been with the Georgia football program since the 2019 season and taken a number of responsibilities with the team, from quality control to the assistant quarterback coach position. He is also said to have played a direct role in executing Georgia's recruiting strategy at the quarterback position over the last few years and was important in the acquisition of Ryan Montgomery and Jared Curtis to the Bulldogs. Van Gorder's coaching career began after his own playing career, initially at Notre Dame under head coach Brian Kelly, before transferring to Youngstown State. So, what do I think of the move? First, it is just outright hysterical how many people they hire from Georgia. Now, it makes sense, you know, it's not like they're hiring and drafting a bunch of players from, and I can take the shot because I went there, from Temple, right? Like, if they were consistently drafting guys from Temple and consistently hiring guys from their football program, like, yeah, maybe you would say what's going on here. But when you're continually hiring from what is arguably the best football program in the country right now, sorry, Corey, I know Ohio State holds the crown, and they're certainly up there, but Georgia has obviously accomplished a ton in terms of what their pros have done, mostly with the Eagles, and then also just their ability to continue to win. So I do like the idea of hiring a coach from their staff. Now, you know, during the offensive coordinator hiring, or I should say the quick process where they just hired Kevin Petullo, a big thing for me was new ideas. Now they bring in Walter Parks, who is young but is potentially a new idea guy. He's mostly been in the NFL. And now you add Montgomery Van Gorder, who also, you know, obviously spent the majority, I mean, all of the last 5 years with Georgia, and it seems like his entire coaching career in college. I like that those are outside voices. Now, they're not the outside voice that holds the authority of a Kellen Moore, who had been an offensive play caller in the NFL for 5 years, certainly not the experience of a Vic Fangio. So I don't think this completely scratches the itch of new ideas, but they are bringing guys like from different, first of all, from college quite a bit, right? Like this guy's from college, the quarterback's coach is from college, Walt Frazier, not from college, but he is, Parks Frazier is a young guy. So they are bringing new voices in there, and I do like that. So if you're going to promote Petullo, it seems like they do agree with me somewhat that they do need outside influence. And again, he's being hired as an offensive assistant, so it's not like he's going to come in and run the offensive meeting. But it is new ideas. I'm sure they hired him because they were impressed with him during the interview process, obviously. And I do like that as a quarterback background too. You know, we got a chance to talk to Dorian Thompson-Robinson earlier on Thursday. I'll play some clips from you from that, but super impressive guy. I would love to see him develop with the Eagles and hiring more quarterback coaches from college that are used to working with young quarterbacks that have that influence of the college game. I do like it. So it's not the biggest hire in the world, but I do like that they continue to poach from the college game. And I do think that's where new ideas come from. So I do like the hire. All right, so in addition to the new hire, the Eagles did present two of their new acquisitions on Thursday as both Kenyon Green and Dorian Thompson-Robinson spoke to the media. Let's start with Kenyon Green because he is obviously projected to play a much larger role next year than Dorian Thompson-Robinson. So Kenyon Green acquired in the Chauncey Gardner-Johnson trade, the 15th overall pick when he was selected, but has not had a good first 3 years in Houston. Missed 1 year entirely with a shoulder injury, re-injured his shoulder in 2024 and missed some time. So he is truly like a fresh ball of clay that has not gone well in the NFL, but he's younger than a lot of prospects that are even in this year's draft. So Kenyon Green was asked about, you guessed it, the opportunity to come learn from Jeff Stoutland. And here's what Kenyon had to say.
What's been your early impression of him?
I had a top 30 here, so I met him before. Man, just great conversation, a great man. I know that he loves his players, he loves the coach, and I mean, I'm gonna give him everything I have. You know, I'm just here, you know, to be my best.
This is really what the trade comes down to, right? Because if the Eagles didn't have an offensive line coach that has a track record of getting the absolute best out of unproven players, you would look at the Kenyon Green trade and go, this guy's been awful. Why would they acquire him in a trade? But with Stoutland, there is some hope. And it's good to hear Kenyon say he's excited to learn from him. I'm sure the second this trade happened, one of the first things anyone who talked to him said was, you're going to get a chance to learn from Jeff Stoutland. I'm sure he will have a Stoutland University hoodie in no time. And that's a large part of the Eagles, part of the reason they acquired him. They look at his time in Houston as almost meaningless because Stoutland visited with him in a top 30 visit. Kenyon Green talked about that and how much he enjoyed his time in Philadelphia. And now that he's here, he'll get to learn from Stoutland. And the Eagles know that gives them an advantage in turning Kenyon Green into the player a lot of people thought he could be when he was coming out the NFL draft. So very cool that he gets a chance to learn from Stoutland. And it's going to be a big part of whether or not this trade a year from now looks foolish. Like if Chauncey goes to Houston and crushes it and Kenyon Green can't play, like this could blow up in their face, but it could also look like in a year where Kenyon Green becomes a starting guard and you know, Stoutland has done it again. So in addition to Stoutland, though, Kenyon Green's going to get a chance to play next to and learn from a lot of really good offensive linemen. So Kenyon Green was asked about just, you know, how excited he is to get in the room and learn from guys like Lane, Landon Dickerson, Mailata, Cam, and all those guys. So here's what Kenyon Green had to say.
Jordan Mailata, I mean, how much do you think that can help revive your career? And what do you think you can learn from those guys?
I think I can learn a lot from just, you know, personality-wise, just being a man and on the field, you know, just their work ethic, you know, just attention to details that they have, just, you know, just watching their game. I'm very excited, you know, to get to meet all of them, you know, be in a room with them and, you know, just become a part of the brotherhood.
So obviously another part of this trade is that in addition to learning from Stoutland, the Eagles probably feel they can plug people in between Cam Jurgens and Lane Johnson and they'll play fine. And it's not that crazy to think. They just did it with Mekhi Becton. So in addition to the fact that he'll get to learn from Stoutland, having been around, obviously been around Stoutland, but having been around the offensive linemen in the room, like, they're a great group of guys. And I do think that Kenyon Green is lucky to be able to be in this opportunity. Like, look at the money Mekhi Becton is about to make or has already made because of what he did. So Kenyon Green going into a contract year, and I believe there's a fifth-year option potentially, but regardless, like, going into a critical year for him professionally to get a chance to learn from these guys, much like Stoutland, I think the Eagles probably feel good acquiring underperforming players and thinking that these offensive linemen he'll play next to can help them, can help that player turn into the best version of himself. So the last thing from Kenyon Green is, and this was an under-discussed part of when they acquired him, Kenyon Green has always played on the left side. Obviously, with the Eagles, the hole is now on the right side of the line. So Kenyon Green was asked about that, and here's what he had to say.
Does that factor into your success, whether you're on the left or right?
Wherever my team needs me. Wherever my team needs me, I'm there for them. So it don't matter where I'm playing at.
So nothing crazy there, all right? I mean, obviously, he's not going to come out and be like, yeah, I'm better on the left, and that's where I want to play. Like, sorry, buddy, you're probably going to line up on the right. But, you know, the fact that he has snaps on the left, he could potentially be a swingman as a backup. If you're going to be a backup on the offensive line on game day, you have to have the ability to play multiple positions. But learning right guard, I would assume, is going to be his priority since that is where the hole is. Obviously, he's not going to start at left guard. Safe to say that's going to be Landon's job. So, yeah, the switching sides is another part of it. Like, who knows? Maybe he'll be better on the left side. He never should have been on the right side. There's certainly that possibility. But as he does learn from Stoutland and learn from the offensive linemen, he's also going to be learning to play on a new side of the ball. So that'll definitely be something to track as we start to watch him in you know, offseason workouts and training camp. And, God, I can't wait for training camp. All right. Next up, we got a chance to talk to Dorian Thompson-Robinson. First of all, let me say, super, super impressive guy. Like, you could just tell why this guy plays quarterback. Seemed super smart, seemed like he had a good personality. Like, I can see why this guy plays a leadership position. And, you know, for the Eagles quarterback factory, like, I think they found another one. Like, I'm in on Dorian Thompson-Robinson. I really don't care what he did in Cleveland. Like, much like Kenyon Green, Kenyon's a little different because now he's going to have good coaching, but I will never judge a quarterback for struggling in Cleveland. I mean, like, that's an impossible place to play. So I was really impressed by Dorian Thompson-Robinson. One thing, I'm not going to play the audio of it, but one thing I think is very understated when it comes to what he was good at in college but struggled in Cleveland is he was really accurate in college. Like, now he wasn't throwing the ball all over the field, but he was an accurate passer in college, and that changed dramatically in Cleveland, where his completion percentage, I think it might even be in the 50s. Like, he has a low completion percentage. But you want to know why that is? Because he's got a bad coaching staff, in my opinion. I think it's a bad coaching staff. He's like a bad team. It's a dysfunctional team. It's hard to be accurate when no one's on the same page. Your accuracy doesn't really get displayed there completely. So I do think with better coaching and, you know, if it came to this, playing in with the Eagles starters with like Saquon and AJ, like, he'll have way better players around him who will be on the same page. I think the accuracy you saw in college will display itself with the Eagles. So I'm in on Dorian Thompson-Robinson. But the most interesting thing he said that definitely caught the attention of me, and I would say every Big J out there that like loves a little anecdote, is that him and Jalen Hurts share a mentor, but you would never in a million years guess what it is. The most random thing. So here's Dorian Thompson-Robinson talking about how he already has a bit of a connection to Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, I'll jump right into the quarterback room. I've crossed paths with Jalen a few times. He's worked with a chess mentor of mine and Seth Mikowski, so we have a little bit of familiarity there. I have to ask him a bit about chess when I get into the room. And if he wants to play a couple games or two, so.
So honestly, I thought I misheard him at first, but you got to love that. Like, first of all, so Jalen, very Jalen, to have a chess mentor. Like, Jalen's such an old soul. To have a chess mentor is just very on brand. But then the fact that Dorian Thompson-Robinson also does it, he mentioned that Chip Kelly taught him about it, and I, you know, kind of told him to do it. But, you know, he also talked about how that is good for him as a quarterback, and I thought the answer was really good too. So here is Dorian Thompson-Robinson on why he uses a chess mentor.
Yeah, man, so much of this position is about decision making, and so I think that's really all chess is. It's just a board just to make decisions on. And every decision means something. You have to be consistent in that. And so I think that's really how it helps playing quarterback and really all positions, is just being able to take that same mentality and mindset into the game and know that you got to be locked in for full four quarters.
So I love it. Like, as a former chess champion, someone that, you know, took home a chess trophy in third grade in a tournament, yes, I absolutely came in second place in that tournament. I was pretty crazy. I actually was in Atlanta visiting a friend. He was in a chess tournament. So I was like, all right, I'll join. And I just came through and beat everybody but one person. So yes, that is impressive for me. No big deal. But Dorian Thompson-Robinson working with a chess mentor is just perfectly great and amazing. You just got to love it. So finally, he did talk about what he could learn from Jalen Hurts. And here is what he had to say about the opportunity to play with and learn from Jalen.
Him, just getting to be around him this upcoming season, what are you looking forward to most about being in the room with him? And what have you admired most about just his career trajectory so far?
Yeah, I think everybody just raves about how professional he is, both on and off the field, especially at such a young age. And so really just getting to see that approach every day, again, support him and compete with him in any way I can. That's only going to make me better, as well as the rest of the room. But, yeah, I've been a fan and admiring Jalen for quite some time now. I want to say his Alabama days, but really it was really his Oklahoma days that really stuck with me in that transition of his career and how he was able to prevail through that in those situations. So I think yeah, I've been a fan of Jalen for a while now.
It is, you know, you saw this, I don't know how closely you've been paying attention to draft stuff, but Jackson Dart, the quarterback prospect, I believe out of Ole Miss, said he models his game after Jalen Hurts. And you're definitely starting to see more and more quotes pop up about how players have been following Jalen's career and what they can learn from him and how they admire his game and the things he does well. And it's just, if I can take you back to when Jalen was drafted, and how he was viewed as a backup, how his career didn't go well in Alabama, had to go to Oklahoma. It's just crazy to me that, no, I shouldn't say crazy, but it's just good perspective of how far he has come. He is now like at the Jordan facility being like getting rounds of applause from the employees as he talks about being Super Bowl MVP. Players are talking about a chance to learn from him. So yeah, I mean, you know, we've all watched Jalen develop over these past 5 years? Yeah, since he's been drafted. And it's pretty cool to see where he is at. So on the other side, I do want to get into some stuff. A really good interview on the morning show with Joe Banner about the cap space, but also a bunch of different other things. So I'll get into that on the other side. But first, a word from our sponsors. So Joe Banner, obviously of Eagles, you know, general managing fame. We talk so much about Andy Reid and how he set the foundation for the franchise and what they've become. Joe Banner, a massive part of that as well, as obviously Joe, you know, taught Howie Roseman, hired Howie Roseman, which he talks about in this interview, and, you know, really shaped how the Eagles run things. So Joe Banner was on the morning show, and I'm just going to play that whole interview for you because I think it's super interesting. And then I have some thoughts about some of the cap stuff he said on the other side. So here's Joe Banner with the WIP Morning Show.
Longtime president of the Eagles, ran him for about 15 years. Joe Banner joins us this morning. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. Appreciate the kind words as well.
Oh, it's our pleasure, and it's well deserved, and there's no question about it. And Joe, before we get to the
thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I mean, let me give you a thanks on this one right out of the gate, Joe, because we can talk all about free agency we want in the modern day. The biggest thing to address here is thanks for bringing John Ritchie to the city of Philadelphia 20 years ago. Because otherwise, yeah, there is no Joe DeCamera, John Ritchie show on WIP.
How disappointing was that, Joe? Back in free agency 2003, you sign a fullback who came in from the Raiders, and people are expecting like help offensively, and I didn't really.
He's being self-deprecating. Hey, Joe, he delivered. I mean, the injury was unfortunate, but I always tell John, he knows that he was a damn good player.
You know, when people ask me our best move, I always say it's John.
Nice. So good. So good. All right. So I like it, Joe.
Really fun.
All right. Let's get down to the business here. So obviously there's been a lot going on. We saw your tweet earlier this week when you refer to the Eagles cap situation as challenging, more challenging than usual. And we knew it would be. I've been surprised how many have been out the door. I knew there'd be some. It's caught me a little off guard. Has it been more extensive of an exodus than you expected, or is this in line with what you figured it would be given the challenges and how many great players they had on the team?
Yeah, no, this is about where I expected, but we should be very aware this is not the end. So the ability to keep some of their own guys that we knew were going to be expensive, the cap could contribute to that being harder. But I think one of the things that the Eagles have done really well here in recent years is realize that how long the offseason is. Some of us think, you know, first weekend it's over, and they've made moves every year that have enhanced the team. So I'm not surprised by what's happened. I will be surprised if we were talking 2 months from now, we haven't seen some additions that are either some, you know, veterans that are free that can fill some needs, or whether they're, you know, young guys that are emerging, or more aggressive stance in the draft. But I would be very surprised if we don't see some additional moves that help them in a couple of key areas.
Joe, when you watch the Eagles offseason year after year, what do you feel most when you discuss Howie Roseman? Is it pride? I mean, I don't want to take it any further than that. What do you feel when you observe the moves that this team makes? And it's how we doing it.
Yeah, no, listen, I do feel pride. I mean, remember, we weren't just Howie's first, like, NFL job. We were fundamentally his first job in life. So it was a very big projection. And I put him in a position, you know, kind of side by side with me working on things. And he replaced somebody that was actually doing a good job. That's, you know, a compliment to at least what I thought the upside was. But I also think that some of the you know, reluctance to feel like, you know, you can never admit you're wrong. A lack of fear of making a mistake, the aggressiveness. I mean, so it's not just for me, like the picks and some of the team building philosophies that I think contributed to the earlier success and a big part of the success now. It's, you know, some of the things that just so few people in the NFL, is the fear of failure is just so driving, fear of putting your own job in jeopardy. The fact that, you know, Howie he acts as if that doesn't even exist, and he's just making decisions that are the best interest in the league. Just by that itself, it's a significant competitive advantage. So, you know, and that's what we tried to do earlier, you know, be fearless, you know, just trust yourself and, you know, other people who you want to be happy and excited, like the fans. If you get it right, they will be, even if they don't like it in the moment. And if you get it wrong, by the way, even if they agreed with you, they're not going to be happy with you. So put it out of your mind and just make the best decisions to win. And I feel happy that I see the ability and willingness to do that.
Wow. Yeah, that's really interesting, and thank you. Was it right for the Eagles to care most about Zach Bond this round of free agency?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because it is a little bit of a change, and it obviously reflects, you know, Vic's philosophies and his history. If you look at it, linebackers have been much more important to him than have been historically, at least recently historically, the Eagles. You know, I think it's two things. One, what I just mentioned, which is Vic's philosophy and obviously how well Bond played. I think the other thing is, and this is another thing they're doing, you know, much better than anybody in the league, they have anticipated these needs, especially on the defensive line, and they have prepared for them, and they've drafted players that look like they can step in. They may not be equal from day one, but they certainly could be, and then they're going to grow from there. So the linebacker spot, if they didn't re-sign him, they were going to take a step back unless they got something in the draft that contributed very quickly. But, you know, they drafted Hunt in the third round last year, and he looked very good in limited play this year. Ojomo was already playing really, really well. You know, Williams was an excellent contributor, but the money he got is even more than, you know, that you know, showing up even more than we would have anticipated. So I'm curious myself, and I have no idea, can't tell from their actions, did they really make a philosophical change here, or was it a reflection of the fact that they do have some young players coming up, even above the young that are already playing, you know, like the Smiths and Carters, who could step right in and actually have the unit not take a step backwards, even if it does probably for a very brief period of time. So I'm curious myself. I think we'll see over time, was it a change of philosophy? Was it just the circumstance of the moment?
How challenging is the cap situation? You tweeted about that. More challenging than we realize. How bad is it?
Yeah, well, first of all, I wouldn't consider it bad because they've been to 3 Super Bowls in 8 years, and part of it
was
so it's hard to call it bad. Now, it does mean, though, that you're seeing right now they have to make some choices that they probably would prefer not to and lose some people that were still in a position that could have helped them. And going forward, it loosens back up, not all the way to where they were. It's mainly driven by the fact that they've taken the approach that they're going to always push forward cap charges, so take the lower charge now and the higher charge later, which dramatically increases your chance of having to take what in the league we would call miscellaneous charges, which is charges left for players no longer in your team.
Mm-hmm.
So as you take the risk of that, there is some price to pay. So, you know, this year the Eagles have almost $50 million in miscellaneous charges. So the league is basically working around, they get off here at $280 million cap. The Eagles really only have $230 million to spend. That's the reason that you're seeing them need to leave, let some players go that they prefer to keep. But they've benefited from this system. So you can't go, oh, we got all this benefit, and oh, my God, now there's a price to pay. Because I think you have to say, with going to 3 Super Bowls in 8 years, the price is worth it now. It's not like they're going to be in some huge retrenchment here, and they're going to have to go back to stinking or anything like that at all. It's just going to be harder to overcome kind of a more limited cap than they've historically had. Now, part of the reason they did this, which was also very smart, was the cap was going up very dramatically. So the price you pay for mistakes is automatically reduced just by that. So I think for the next couple of years, you're going to continue to have to make some tough decisions, but this is the most challenging year. They'll get the compensatory picks out of this, and then the impact of this will be smaller but not non-existent going forward.
Joe Banner with us here on WIP, helping us all understand this cap stuff and the Eagles offseason. You know, Joe, one of the things that was a hallmark of your tenure and most of Howie's as GM was extending players in a season, during the season, locking them up as they would maybe approach free agency or maybe even a couple years out. And it was very successful, very successful. And I know that we've noticed that they haven't done that in recent years. I've questioned, and not questions is maybe the right word, I've wondered whether it's a Sirianni influence, that perhaps the head coach said to the GM, hey, look, I want my guys focused during the year. I don't want 5 players annoyed at one player that does get an extension in October and the other 5 players are disappointed and then perhaps don't play as well the next 3 months. But I'm, you know, so who knows? We don't know until we get a chance to ask Howie or Nick. We don't know. Do you think that there's been a philosophical adjustment? Do you sense that? Because, you know, obviously they entered free agency with none of these guys re-signed when they could have been in October. Do you think there's been an adjustment?
So I'm going to say what you just said is no way to know, but I will say it seems so. But there's a rule change that could have also played a role as well. It used to be you had to kind of, you know, get very creative and figure out how to kind of push money you had forward. You know, if you had, let's say, $10 million left in the cap at the end of the year, you used to have to do kind of creative and kind of tricky things, kind of annoying things, frankly, to push that money into the future. Now, all you have to do is say you want to push it into the future. Literally, you write a letter saying we want to push this money into the cap in our future, and it's done. So that provided a motivation from a team perspective to make sure you were using up most of that money so you didn't have to do this other tricky stuff by doing deals in season. So it could be a combination of both. It could be either one. You know, we won't know unless they answer that question very directly, you know, in an interview, which they're not likely to do. But it could be either one of those things or a combination, because a rule was changed. It's a number of years ago, but it wasn't something that created a whole lot of immediate adjustment. But it made it much easier to push leftover the cap room forward, which made it slightly less desirable to be doing deals in the season, especially because they do have the effect you just mentioned. There's no doubt that doing those deals, I hope, had some benefits, but there was also some drawbacks to it because you didn't get all of them done, and then you do have some people thinking, why'd they do him instead of me? So
yeah.
Those two things are very real.
Joe, when the Saquon news came out, I think it was last week, about the extension, you know, a lot of people started thinking about T.O. and 20 years ago. And I saw on Twitter you referenced that this situation is very different than the T.O. one. Can you just detail, first off, do you think Howie did right by extending Saquon after 1 year, which is unusual? And what were the differences between the Saquon and T.O. situation as you sense it?
So first of all, the simple answer is yes, he did right. Mostly by just showing a player in the locker room that, you know, the situation can be, you know, rewarded. But what happened mostly, in my opinion, is it's similar to what the Eagles did a couple years ago for A.J. Brown. The fact that it was after 1 year versus three was not really that material. And it's exactly the same thing that the 49ers did for McCaffrey last year. Now, what's different is a lot of things. T.O. had a 7-year deal. So you couldn't just add years. It was nothing he was interested in, and frankly, we'd have been more than happy to do it, but it didn't make any sense really to do it. And really what they did here was in Barkley's situation is they took a very small percentage of the new money and the added years and they put it up front. So it's really, in terms of the cash flow of the deal and what he's likely to earn, a very, very small, much smaller change than it may look or have felt like or frankly got portrayed as. So T.O. was looking for a significant, very significant adjustment. In fact, his first choice would have been to just rip up the contract and start from scratch. And the other thing that was different was, you know, the way that deal was structured was funny. You may remember he actually had agreed to a trade to the Ravens.
That's right.
For a second-round pick. And we actually came up with some, you know, he had regret about that because he didn't think it was a team interested in that had a quarterback he was excited to play with. At that point, they didn't realize we were interested. So once they realized we were interested, we actually came up with an idea that he could use to try to get out of the Ravens trade, which he successfully filed a grievance. They actually created a settlement without the case being heard. So as a result of that, that deal was structured in an unusual way. There was a large amount of money in year one and a much smaller amount of money in year two, but the right amount of money to make him one of the top paid couple of wide receivers in football over the first 2 years. So it was kind of like he was forgetting that year one was purposely very inflated and year two was purposely somewhat deflated. So he was literally looking for a totally new contract. So the idea of adding years to already what was a 7-year contract and moving a small percentage of that into the remaining 2 years in Barkley's case was nothing even close to anything that he was looking for or asking for or indicated he was willing to take. You know, the other thing to remember on the T.O. thing, which, again, is very different than the Barkley, he obviously left us and then signed a deal with Dallas. The deal he signed with Dallas was for almost literally the couple of bucks difference, but essentially the same exact amount of money we owed him over the next 3 years in the contract.
Wow.
In fact, if you factor in the amount of money that he then, you know, lost to the suspension, he would have made more money just staying with us for 3 years. So if it was
holy cow,
honestly about the money, he didn't do any better than if he just stayed with us, which for me was comforting because it said, okay, you paid him fair to the market. Because you got a second chance to go to the market and basically got the same amount of money.
Wow.
I'm rounding up when I say this.
That is fascinating. With an eye to the rest of the NFC East, watching what's going on with free agency and whatnot, speaking of the Dallas Cowboys, what the hell are they doing?
That's a great way to ask it.
They have a very different philosophy about how to manage their cap. And they haven't spent the money that they've spent anywhere near as wisely as, for example, you know, the Eagles have. You know, and I think they're in trouble. I think people are misreading it, too. You know, watching the Eagles, hopefully more of the league is convinced that not just having good lines, but dominant lines put you in a position to have sustained really significant success. The Cowboys do not act like they believe any of that. And I think that limits. And they can have good regular seasons, maybe make a mini run occasionally in the playoffs. But I think as long as they employ that philosophy, I mean, they're going to end up paying Parsons, Lamb, and Dak three contracts we all knew they were going to do. It's just a question of when for how much.
Yeah.
You know, in hindsight, we could say if they'd done those deals 1 year earlier, they would have $15 to $20 million more available in cap space for the next 5 years. So it could be $100 million over the next 5 years than if they waited as they did to do those deals. So, you know, a lot of people wait to do the deals because they think that they have this fear of the player getting hurt and then they'll have made a mistake if they go early. The truth is that used to be true, but for a number of years now, players that get hurt are getting paid just what you would have expected in free agency as if they hadn't gotten hurt. So the benefit of waiting, if there was any, which obviously we never thought there really was, which we didn't do, but other teams did, and some smart people like Bill Polian always used to wait to do contracts. So some smart people believed in that. But whatever the benefit was, it no longer exists. So waiting to do these contracts is just a lack of objectivity or something that is not good.
But unbelievable.
Good for us.
Yeah.
But not good for Cowboys.
You're not kidding. Joe Banner here on WIP. Joe, what's your guess of what happens with Goddard and Becton? Are they back or not?
Goddard and who was the other one?
And Mekhi Becton, the guard.
Yeah. No, Becton, no. And Goddard, yes, would be my guess. And there again, I mean, I think they just traded for a guard. I think Steen could at least be solid in there. So I think that they're okay with that. I mean, I don't think it's equal. I think it is a little bit of a step back, but I think it's little, and the rest of the line is strong enough. It doesn't concern me.
Joe, on the Goddard thing, so, you know, we've heard reports that the strategy for the Eagles is to try to get Goddard's number down, his total compensation down, essentially to have him take a pay cut. How uncomfortable, I'll use that word, how uncomfortable is it and how messy and tricky can it get when you approach one of your own and say, love you, big guy, but need you to take less or we're going to cut you? I know, yeah. You know, you were in those conversations. What is that dynamic like?
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to avoid that moment. Unfortunately, they mostly do. So they get in the situation less than probably any team in the league. But it's terrible for every, you know, especially you're coming off a Super Bowl when you want to thank everybody. You don't want to be punishing anybody. Then, you know, players, they're no different than you or me. I mean, we all probably think we're a little bit better than we actually are. So they're not going to be thinking they deserve this, so to speak. In this instance, I honestly think that he could risk saying no and still get paid well from free agency, but he could also end up having the Eagles just say, okay, we wanted to take a shot, but, you know, we're just going to stick with the deal if you're not okay with that. I'd be surprised if they were willing to lose him over that, but they could.
Yeah, they could. You know, most of the stuff, I guess Joe goes through the agent, but is there a point when you talk to the player and say, I want to level with you and tell you why we're approaching it the way we do? How much goes to the player? How much goes to the agent in those negotiations?
Well, you'd always rather talk to the player, at least have the player hearing you directly, because you're always worried about how what you're saying is being portrayed. And, you know, if the agent does not think you should be taking a deal, he's likely to portray it in the most negative possible light, and, you know, vice versa. So, you know, you'd always... may surprise the player to hear, but you'd always like them to hear your argument directly as opposed to worrying about how it was being, you know, reframed or rephrased.
Sure, that makes sense.
But
it does.
First of all, you legally can't do that without permission, and very few agents would give you permission to do that, and most players don't even really want to hear it. They'd rather, they're comfortable just letting their agent do it and then convey.
Makes sense.
What was said to them.
Yep. Well, Joe, let me thank you for you know, lending your tremendous expertise to our program today. And I'll just say, you know, what I've always thought, which is that you were a phenomenal credit to the Eagles organization and helped in many ways build the modern day, you know, approach. So thank you for that. And thanks for being a big part of today's show, Joe.
Well, happy to be on, and I appreciate the kind words.
You guys, and by the way, good job cutting Richie in 05. He was done. He was cooked. All right, Joe. Go ahead.
Well, we went backwards in 05. Obviously, it was him. So
there you go.
Thank That's, you.
That is true. A compliment to Richie on the way out. Thanks, Joe. Stay well. We'll talk.
Just kidding. Take it easy.
All right. There he is. Joe Banner. He's got a joke on the way in and a joke on the way out. I like it a lot.
So it never gets old hearing the T.O. saga. It feels like every time someone talks about it, obviously, I have a bad memory, but I feel like I learned something new. And I also feel like it just... I can never consume enough content about that. I wished we had a Go Birds Daily during the T.O. saga. That would have been simply unbelievable. But yeah, I thought what he had to say was super interesting. But so the cap space thing, I did want to talk about that. So he sent out a tweet, which Joe asked him about, which essentially is like the Eagles have a tighter cap space than they've had in the past. And first of all, let me say, obviously, Joe Banner has run an NFL cap, so he has an understanding of it, you know, at least from back in the day how it worked, like a better understanding of it than I do. But I do disagree to an extent with with his emphasis on dead cap hits. And it sounds like that is really what his issue is. And I don't want to speak for him completely, but just listening to it, you can hear him bring up, like, I think he calls them miscellaneous cap hits, but like essentially what he's bringing up is dead cap hits and how that's impacting the Eagles' ability to make maneuvers this offseason. So respectfully, if I do understand what his criticism is, respectfully, I'm going to disagree with that criticism. So first, let's talk about dead cap hits and just quickly what they are. So essentially, when the Eagles sign a player, let's say they give them $100 million over 4 years. Or like, yeah, they give him a $100 million contract over 4 years. They give him a $20 million signing bonus. That leaves $80 million over 4 years. Obviously, there's some base salary and all that. But the point I'm making is they'll take the $80 million and stretch it out. Let me start over because I feel like I'm making this too complicated. A dead cap hit is essentially all the signing bonus that's left over after you cut a player. So if the Eagles give somebody a $50 million signing bonus and they stretch it out over 5 years and they cut him after year three, they have $20 million, so $10 million a year over 5 years. They keep him for 3 years, so $30 million of it goes against the cap. And that extra 20, when they cut him, gets accelerated to when they cut him. So if you cut a player, there will be $20 million in dead cap. So the way the Eagles have low cap hits is they take signing bonuses, they stretch them out, and then it lowers the amount on the cap hit each year. Dead cap hits happen when you stretch things out really far, and then the player doesn't play for that whole contract, which is the majority of the time. So last year, for example, last year, the Eagles had, I believe it was around $25 million in dead cap hits just for Jason Kelce and Fletcher Cox. Like, there were other ones there, but Jason Kelce and Fletcher Cox were on the Eagles' books in 2024. They took up a portion of the cap space. In 2025, this upcoming season, the Eagles have $55 million in dead cap hit. Jason Kelce, $16 million. Josh Sweat, $16 million. Fletcher Cox, $10 million. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, $4 million. Devin White, $2 million. So $55 million of the Eagles' cap space is allocated to players that are not on the team. And that is, in my understanding, like essentially what Joe Banner's criticism is that they have a lot of dead cap hit. And so a larger portion of their cap is being eaten up than other teams. But that's not really an issue, in my opinion, in the eyes of the Eagles. Now, $55 million is a large number. So next year in 2026, it's only $20 million. So it cuts down by over half. But Howie Roseman was asked about dead cap hits because it became a thing a few years ago where people became obsessed with like the dead cap hits, right? And Howie was asked about it. And I'm going to read the quote that he said. So here's Howie talking about dead cap hits. Quote, "It's no different than," and I'm stealing this from Bryce Johnson, our cap guy, so I'm not taking ownership of it, "but it's no different than when you're trying to buy a house," Howie said. "If you have the opportunity to buy a house and put all the cash down, or the interest rates are really good and you're going to pay it over time, why wouldn't you use that money now and understand that as it goes forward, you're going to be able to do that? It's the same money. If I give somebody $10 and I decide to prorate it, it's the same $10, but that's going to affect my cap the same way. But if I'm doing it where the value of the cap is not $100, but now it's $150, why wouldn't I take it in those times?" So essentially what Howie is saying there, and obviously end quote, but essentially what Howie is saying is if he gives a $10 million cap hit over 5 years, in year one, when the cap hit is, let's say the cap is $100, that's 10% of the cap. In year five, let's say the cap has gone up to $200 million, it's now 5%. So the strategy of doing this is smart. You take a cap hit and stretch it out, and it takes up a smaller percentage of the cap 5 years from now than it did in that first year. Now, $55 million is a decent portion of the cap, but what the Eagles do is with low cap hits, they can continually stretch them out. So there will not really be a time when the Eagles have five players on the books for $20 million. A lot of them are going to be, even their highest cap hits, 17 is like, I think 17 might be their highest, but then a lot of them are like 4 million, 5 million, 10 million, 7 million. Like they have small cap hits because they stretch it out. Now, as you could see, next year in 2026, that $50 million number goes down to $20 million. So ultimately, while I do get Joe Banner's point about how the cap hit at $55 million in dead money is a large number, I disagree with him that it's a concerning number and that like they are tighter than normal. I think they're tighter than normal because they have to go out and pay guys next year and they have a lot of high paid players on their roster already. But with $20 million in cap space, they can still go out and be very active if they want to. And I think that it's more a choice not to as opposed to an ability not to. And I think the way they're managing the cap and anyone potentially freaking out over dead money, I don't think is a big deal. So anyway, obviously, that's just my opinion. Joe Banner can have his. But I wanted to talk about it, and I thought it was a really good interview. So thank you guys so much for listening. As always, he's Elliot. I'm James. Talk to you guys later.